welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Andy Packham, and we're still walking the high line in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well, the unbeaten start to the season is over thanks to a quite frankly crazy first half at Stamford Bridge, where we conceded four goals in 20 minutes. As good as Cole Palmer is, questions have been asked yet again about the high line and how easy it is to break it. However, we had the chance to put that right on Sunday with Spurs visiting the Amex, who are fresh from beating Man United last weekend, but everyone does that, right? In other news, we were saddened to hear the news of the loss of former Albion manager and managing director Barry Lloyd this week. Today, myself and Alan Wears are joined by a man who played over 300 times for the Albion and knew Barry well. Please welcome back to the show, Robert Codner. And joining Robert is a man who also knew Barry very well. It's the former editor of Goal's Eye. It's Ian Hart. Welcome back to the show, guys. Lovely to see you. Unfortunately, not very happy circumstances.
No. Very sad. Obviously, known Barry a long, long time. And we crossed swords on a number of occasions. But in later life, struck up a friendship. And I know he'd been ill. I understand, Bob, you'd been to see him at Hartfield House, where he was, up at Leatherhead. We'd actually been trying to get him some help from the PFA when he first had his stroke a few weeks ago, and that was still ongoing. He hadn't been well for a short time, but he was still Barry right up until not that long ago. He was still Barry, always had a story. He will be sadly missed. As we go on, like to touch on sort of various things, and I'm sure Robert will as well. Mm-hmm. That as fans, nothing to do with you as a player, Robert, but as fans, we think we know everything, right? We think we know everything. We think we know. And as I progressed into the radio and into writing in newspapers and actually sitting down with Barry, sometimes with a tape recorder, sometimes without, things came out, that as fans we would have never known about. And I think he's a huge part of the Albion's history.
Yeah.
And I'm off to Spain, sadly, at the weekend, but everybody will be sat in that lovely stadium on Saturday or Sunday afternoon. But with the likes of Barry Lloyd, we wouldn't have a club to support.
Yeah. I mean, actually, Hartley, I've got that written down here because obviously I know that your history, and obviously there were some interesting stories that came out in Goal's Eye at the time. Yeah. But I mean, it's fair to say that Barry's time at the Albion was much more important than he was actually given credit for. And the stuff that was going on behind the scenes with his hands tied behind his back half the time.
Yeah.
We never knew that.
It wouldn't be because we turn up. All right, the fanzine culture to an extent, and the phone-in culture, and now social media, which we'll touch on later on, I think, with the unfair criticism of Adam Webster especially. But Barry's remit, when he got the job when they sacked Alan Mullery in Jan 1987, was basically, we haven't got any money, right? So we've got XYZ games left. You've just got to get through those games, and you've got to clear you've got to clear everybody out,
Well, it's important to note at that point, Harty, that when Barry was actually brought to the club, and he'd had quite a lot of success with Worthing, actually, hadn't he, at that particular moment in time, and he got them almost into what was the conference back then.
Yeah.
But he was actually brought in as a U team coach. And to try and progress the academy as much as he could. So when he was given that job as the manager, it was to actually, because he knew what was coming through, and they wanted to, like you said, there was no money. But having said that, one of the players he did sign, which was a couple of years later, was a chap called Robert Codner. That was actually quite a lot of money back then, Rob. It was like 115 grand in total,
Non-league
which was,
record then. It was a
it
non-league.
was a non-league record. You've read my notes.
In that case, Robert, I want to get back to Hearty in a minute because you know everything, context is everything. But give us a flavour of your first memories of dealing with Barry Lloyd.
Well, my first memories of him, one was he was an absolute gentleman with me, because I wasn't the easiest of person people to deal with at the time. What I'll always be eternal grateful to Barry for was he gave me a second chance at becoming a professional footballer. And without him, I most probably wouldn't have had the career that I had, you know, because he gave me that second chance. But I'd just like to say what he did do for a lot of players, apart from myself, was give players who relatively wouldn't have had a chance to play at the levels that we played at. He gave them opportunity. And you know, there's quite a few non-league players who became league players because of Barry's way of giving people opportunities and giving them a chance, you know. So I'd be
Nick,
eternal
well, Nicky
grateful.
Bissett was one. He came with you, didn't he?
Exactly. You know, and if Nicky never got a bad injury, I'm sure he would have gone on to become a really, really big player in football, you know. But he got a bad injury early on, and that put you know, to his career sort of thing. But
Not
what
naming names, Duncan Shearer of Swindon Town. Yeah, quiet.
a
So, sorry, Robert, when you say Barry gave you a second chance, what happened with the first chance?
No, just basically, you know what it's like. You're at Tottenham, which is where I was at. Got offered a pro, then got taken away. Then went into non-league football under Barry Fry. I was quite successful there at Barnet. Ended up playing for England, England C, which is now England C. And then we had a friendly match. I was playing for, I think it was Millwall then, against Brighton, done really well. And after the game, Barry just trumped Millwall's offer, and that was the end of it. And that's when I ended up coming to Brighton.
Yeah. When Wimbledon interested at the same time?
Yes, I went and spoke to Wimbledon, but Barry was quite persuasive, and I liked what he had to say. And yeah, so I decided to sign for Brighton, which, you know, I was happy to do, and you know, I have no regrets about doing that.
So Hearty, you were talking just now about obviously Barry's sort of immediate career before he came to Brighton, and he's turned up. With, like you say, with the remit of, by the way, son, there's no cash. Can you
You
give us
know,
a can you expand on that and give us a flavour of the circumstances under which, bearing in mind we were in the FA Cup final 3.5 years earlier, of how we got from that circumstance to this, to the point that we were employing effectively what had been a non-league manager to take over a second division side, taking over from a former England inter well, his former teammate. To be told you can do this without any finances.
And club legend, not to mention.
I think you know, Barry would, and we're quite an extensive interview on Southern Counties. I think it went over 3 weeks because he once I got him talking, I couldn't stop him. But it was basically there was no money. People forget about the FA Cup final. Fair play to them, good luck to them. All that squad on the FA Cup final were on unbelievable bonuses, which had been agreed with Melia and Bamba. And so re really, we'd got to the FA Cup final, but we'd got relegated. And basically, Bamba had run out of money. And then Bamba was ousted, and then the others came in. A case in point with that half a season that Barry had where we got relegated, because people forget we were 13th when Mullery got the sack after winning at Grimsby. And then Barry came in, and we only won one game for the rest of the season. Thankfully, it was Crystal Palace on Easter Monday.
Wee.
But one of the cases in point was Dean Saunders was on appearance money, right? And Brian Bedson, who was the chairman then, went to Barry and said, I've never liked doing this as a club director, but we cannot afford Dean Saunders to play this week. So you're going to have to pick Richard Tiltman, who's an old schoolmate of mine and a mate of mine now. Mm-hmm. And so there was this urban myth, oh, Barry picked Tiltman from Worthing over Saunders because he had to.
Yeah.
He was told there is no money. We cannot pay him his appearance money. And Saunders is a little bit naughty because he's gone on and said down the years, oh, I was Richard Tiltman, this ginger-haired non-league player was picked in front of me, which is totally unfair. The other thing, Saunders was told he could rip his contract out and walk out of the club at the end of the season. Barry managed to get 60 grand off Oxford United.
Because
that's 60 grand more than we were expecting. But everyone's always said, oh, he let Saunders go for next to nothing. He actually got more than what he was asked to get.
Yeah, because I remember at the time, I was absolutely fuming about it. I thought, how could, you know, this was in the age of, we'd already had our first £1 million player at that point. And Saunders was this player that was really highly rated, in that particular climate. We were playing in the second division, so it was like, which was, and there was no like cliff edge between the second and the first division at the time. You could actually legitimately get promoted from the second division and go out to the first division and compete, possibly even win it back in those days. Mm. So it was like, you know. The fact that he was going for £60,000, I thought, "What are you thinking?" But then I had no idea what was going on.
No, no.
Can I just rewind 10, 12 minutes ago to exactly what Harty said?
Yeah,
we don't know anything. You know, I mean, I didn't know about. I mean, I had heard sort of bits and pieces about, you know, boardroom interference on the training ground, which is an absolute no-no in football. And you know, and you even had to just go back a couple of years further, and Chris Catlin having to sell Steve Foster. I mean, Bob, this is not a way to run a football club, is it?
You know, at the end of the day, as I say, I mean, Barry was put in a difficult position, and you know, he had to make tough decisions for the club. I think he came out smelling the roses, really, because he got some bargains, sold them on. You know, so again, you know, you can say me, you could say Mark Gore, you could say Mike Small, you could say Dean Wilkins, you can, you know, there's quite a few players that, you know, came from the lower levels or, you know, out of reaches of football. And, you know, so to sell Steve Foster, he wouldn't have wanted to do that because Fozzie's a great, great character and great to have in the dressing room. And I learned a lot from Fozzie in his second stint when he came back. So I wouldn't have thought he would have wanted to do that, but you know, his hands were tied, so therefore he had to do that. But in saying that, like you say, I mean, he replaced them with players that most probably no one would have looked at in the first place. But you know, and he found a lot of diamonds there, you know, rough diamonds, and made him into diamonds.
There was a brilliant quote from John Byrne this week saying, thanking Barry for rescuing him from France, where he was like playing for Le Havre at the time and not doing an awful lot. And he brought him back and rejuvenated his career, and he's ever so grateful for it. And you've played with all these guys, Bob, and it's like, you know,
Tony Byrne was great, mate. He was a great player to play with. Great, great person. But as a footballer, oh, great ability. I mean, scored some great goals.
And that hair.
I know, that mullet.
He's still got it.
He still looks really well, doesn't he? But no, I mean, it was a pleasure to play with John. Great ability, scored some great goals at important times when we needed him. And, you know, obviously he went on from there and had a very, very successful career, you know, so, you know.
But Harty, I mean, this is what we're saying here in the sort of first 10, 15 minutes of us having this natter, is you can see the size of the disconnect that we'd had back in the 80s between the club and the fans, because you've got Robert here saying what a great guy Barry was and what he was doing and, like I say, working with one hand tied behind his back. And yeah, it's probably fair to say that it's not as though it was his raison d'être, but he did struggle sometimes to endear himself to the fans. So that there's that enormous disconnect between what the fans thought of him at the time, I suppose, probably because of what they were seeing on the pitch and knowing and realizing what was going on in the boardroom versus what the players were considering, Ian.
Barry once said to me when we did our radio stuff, and that he did, because he did the phoning with me a couple of times, summarising that he, in hindsight, he wished he'd been more Barry Fry than Barry Lloyd, because that Martin Hinch would tell us a lovely story about it's absolutely pouring down at Aldershot. We're playing at the recreation ground in the old Division 3 in 87-88, and the fans are singing "Barry, Barry, give us a wave," and he's just sat there chain smoking, and Hinch says to him, for whatever sake, Barry, give him a wave.
Yeah,
all right. And he puts his hand up, and I think this is the thing, and we'll come on to the when he was the managing director, but I do think that we were this almost a divide, but I think it was different being a fan back then as it is to now. You know, we've said it, sadly, we're no longer fans, we're customers now. But, you know, going back to where Barry was with, you know, some of the money that he used from Dean Saunders, he got hold of Nelson and Bremner, played them up front. Yeah. Doug Rugby came in, and we had some, then Chib came in, and Robert came in, and Nicky Bissett, and he had his qualities far outdid his non-quality. You know, shortcomings. But the problem being, to your average man who's working in a factory in Portslade, he don't care about that, does he?
No.
He sees Dean Saunders disappearing up the old Shoreham Road. And don't forget, we got 60 grand off Robert Maxwell at a time when he was nicking millions off pensioners. So that's even better, you know. Yeah. So it is Barry at
it was us that was all at sea.
But he did say that he, you know, in hindsight, he wished he'd been, a bit more, sort of fan friendly, media friendly.
Not
everybody is, though, are they? Not everybody's media friendly, are they?
No.
Yeah.
But they're trained now, Robert. That's where it's changed.
Listen, it's changed now.
They're all media trained.
Yeah.
Unless you're Eric Tenner.
What everyone fails to forget, remember, is no player goes out to play badly.
No.
That's first and foremost. No player does. If they have a bad game, get it. Get it. But obviously, people then, you don't want to give you stick and all that. But there's a certain point where it goes above getting stick.
Yeah.
And, it should never get personal. I don't know too much about the Adam Webster stuff. I didn't even know that he was getting this online abuse. But just touching on that, I mean, you've got to remember that lad or that man's got a family.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got kids and he's got a wife. Do you understand what I'm saying? So
yeah,
totally.
That personal. It should always be. Listen, you get stick if you play bad. By all means, you give people stick, but it should never get too personal. Where it's going to affect him when he goes out thinking that he's going to get stick from his own supporters. You need to get behind him. You need to support him and encourage him because he's wearing a Brighton shirt. He's not wearing an opponent shirt. Do you know what I mean? So
is exactly the point, though. But because I know for a fact that you suffered some dog's abuse when you were playing at times. I remember.
Yeah, Ian knows all about that.
Yeah, I remember. There's one particular game against Bristol City where you were having a stinker, but it was. Yeah.
We didn't get you on specifically just to open up 35-year-old wounds.
I remember it well. But the thing is,
I don't mind the thing, though.
I mean, It's particularly in this day and age where you're looking at people look at as footballers as commodities. They're not you just see them as a price tag. You see them as something on the pitch, and you're not actually seeing them as actual human beings a lot of the time. And people do forget that.
Can I take that one, AD? Actually, also what I'm thinking here as fans is that it's not something I do, but I think a lot of people take the support of their football club so much to heart, it's an extension of their ego, that they can't cope with their team losing, they can't cope with their team playing well. Even sometimes, and it's a nature of, it might even be the nature of their particular personality, where their team might win 6-0, but so and so missed the sitter or so and so gave the ball away. When we have our kind of post-match analysis, when we're at the stadium and say, oh, so and so had a good game, yeah, but he gave the ball away a couple of times. Well, is there ever any player who has a 100% pass rate that, you know, that
No.
and the level of expectation actually sometimes just drives me round the twist. Now, Robert, as a player, I mean, you're protected from it to a point, and probably they are more so now. But you know, doesn't it drive you around the twist when someone comes up to you in the pub or in the shops afterwards and said, "By the way, mate, you were terrible last week. You know, what do you think you were doing?" And all you think is, "I just want to buy some groceries."
No, obviously, but I just think, you know, if you talk about when I was playing, there wasn't as much money as there is now. People think that because there's so much money in the game now, they've got all rights to say whatever, whenever they want to say things, and it shouldn't be like that. At the end of the day, the product is what it is. Money's come into football. Money wasn't in football so much when I was playing, but the money is in football now. And fans need to realize that, as I say, these are human beings as well. And they need to understand that these people have families, and you know, they nobody goes out onto the football
Of
pitch
course.
to play badly for their club. Everybody wants to win football matches. And every now and again you have absolute stinkers, and hopefully the manager saves you from that by pulling you off and putting someone else on.
No
Do you know?
sniggering at the back there. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. But I mean, the point is that even nowadays, when players are on, you know, sort of larcenous salaries, it doesn't make them immune to abuse and grief. And I'm not even just talking about any of our players. I'm talking, you know, there's, who was it? I can't remember. It was someone a couple of weeks ago saying, I'm downing tools because there's too many games. I can't cope. And people were saying, oh, for that level of money, I'd do that. And you think, no, you wouldn't, because you're risking. What's the point of actually having a obscene amount of money now if you can't, if you end up being basically walking like you've got a stone in your shoe for the next 40 years
Yeah,
afterwards?
well,
You know, so.
there was a few players that said that at the time, Alan. You've got to be careful what you wish for, because like two of them are out for this season now. Afterwards,
Yeah,
one of them was
exactly.
Rodri.
Listen, I don't think they should strike. I think with the Premier League, they've all everyone's got big squads. You know, if someone's not, you know, someone's tired, then they should be replaced. You know, they've got big enough squads to do that. I don't think striking is the answer. Do you know what I
No.
mean? So.
But by the same token, it doesn't also mean that, you know, I suppose there is a halfway house to be met, where, you know, the medical professionals could actually turn around to the management. And I suppose it depends on the level of which the management is going to listen and say, well, actually, if you put this player on for the whole 90 minutes, you do risk, you know, X, Y, Z. I mean, I don't know what it was like back in your day, where you basically had either Mike Yaxley or Malcolm Stewart sort of, I don't know, twisting your leg around your neck about three times just to get it back into place.
Super physio. Yeah, super
Yeah.
physio. Sure. Yeah.
But sorry, let's get back to Barry here. And like I say, different times. I mean, from the late 80s in, and obviously us fans can say this, you know, we experienced largely the same experience. Obviously, we had that great bounce back in 88 when we won the third division. But you could also see that there was a little bit of ennui, there was a little bit of boredom of the, you know, the, I think in the 80s, football fans just sort of started drifting away anyway, just because, I mean, there were times at the Goulston when it was horrific, and it was, and the same across the footballing nation. And I think that what we're talking about here, what I'm trying to, the point I'm trying to put across here, especially to those who weren't there, is that Brighton was very much a microcosm of the fan movement. We weren't at the vanguard of it, but we're a microcosm of it, in as much as the crowds were dwindling. We had the fanzine movement, of which you were very much in, not just part of it, you were it. and the whole sort of, revitalization of fans trying to talk to their clubs to actually make them part of the scenery, right, part of the action, rather than just fodder to sort of ignore. But we really had it tough with some of the board, some of the directors from the mid-90s, sorry, mid-80s to mid-90s.
Yeah, but I think it's almost you look back to, people look back with the ones that are still here. They're quite very old now. They look back to World War II and they romanticize it and talk about Vera Lynn and sitting in air raid shelters singing songs when there were millions of people being slaughtered. And yeah, we had some bad times, but we had times after Robert had gone where we nearly lost the whole football club. It has moved on. I mean, I don't want to get away from Baz because we really got to pay tribute to him, and there is one particular story again which fans didn't know about.
Sorry, the point I was going to make here, sorry, cut across you there, Harty, is that Barry was in the middle of this, and I think the point that I'd like to make, and certainly we can see this much clearer in retrospect, is the job that he did was effectively one to keep the club afloat, because you could argue without him, we might have had these troubles 10 years before we did.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. And then when he became chief executive, because basically no one else would do that job, and and he was going to meetings, and when we were, and in better terms, well, no, when we became on better terms, he was showing me plans that he'd had for beading cement works and leaving the Goldstone, but leaving the Goldstone on our terms, and he did work so hard, at a time where things, that he had a young family at home. And I do think just when he was chief executive, and you were still there, Robert, and we kept going in to the winding up petitions,
That's right, yeah.
and he stood on the steps of the High Court waiting for Archer and Stanley to turn up. He was prepared to go into the High Court and take the club into administration, knowing full well that would probably have cost him his job as chief executive and almost certainly manager. But most importantly, it would have ring-fenced the Goldstone, because the administrator wouldn't have let Stanley and Archer do what they did. As it turned out, Archer turned up with his brief saying, "No, Barry, we're going to do that. We're not going into administration. We're going to do 4A585, with the buying the club for less than 60 quid." And then Barry was moved on. And then when Barry was moved on, Barry knew exactly what they were doing. But he had an NDA as part of his severance package, and he had a young family. So Barry sat there, sadly, still getting paid because he had to, because he had a family, he had a mortgage. And he knew exactly what they were going to do. Knew exactly what they were going to do, how they were going to asset strip. And he fell out with Greg over it. And I think fans need to know things like that, along with
It's incredible.
the Dean Saunders thing. We didn't just have a good football manager. At times the football wasn't good. At times it was excellent. And thank you for the semi-final against Millwall on the Sunday, Robert, which I still maintain is your greatest game that
It most probably was.
yeah no it was the greatest game, and the Adamant celebration. I just, Barry, if history will show one thing to all the fans, the 30,000 that packed the Amex, and the thousands who went to the Goldstone, he had the right motives. Sometimes, like Morecambe and Wise with their notes, not necessarily in the right order, but he had the right motives, and when push came to shove, he had to put his family before the club. Because if he'd blown the whistle when he was sacked and Liam Brady was brought in, The whole Goldstone picture would have changed.
Yeah.
But I fully understand why he couldn't do it, because of the NDA.
Yeah. Party, I mean, that would have massively altered the future of the football club right there and then. I mean,
when you drive past, I know we all love the Amex. It can be a bit of a bind to get to, but when you look at the amount of development around the Goldstone ground now, we might have been able to have stayed there, purchased some land behind the south stand, done this, done that, and do what Liverpool have done with Anfield and basically rebuild the stadium, you know, on its original site, which would be, and the Greens wouldn't say it, but it would still be far easier to actually get to than our excellent state-of-the-art stadium, which is in a lovely place, but it's a hell of a place to get to and get, you know, on a match day. And it's just, you know, I just think, I just want to, you know, I'm proud, and he said it sometime, I'm proud to be looking after him on his final journey, which is a testament to the friendship that we both sort of nurtured over the years. But you know, I want everybody to know what a good guy this man was. You know, for all the times that we crossed swords, he had all of our, you know, best interests at heart. You know, and but unfortunately, and I do not blame him, because he couldn't blow the whistle on him because of his NDA.
NDA.
You know, if the Goldstone had been ring fenced, I'm not sure we'd still be there now. But that, as you say, there might be a totally different outlook to the club.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you in association with the brilliant Flowers Unlimited. Al, how can you get your flowers?
Or we can just rock up and ask them nicely for it. Yeah, go to Portland Road in Hove, go and see Dave Costa, go and see Sarah, go and see all the people there. It's great that Dave has stepped in to sponsor the show. Dave is a lifelong Albion fan. And to that point, anyone who goes along to Flowers Unlimited and shows the fact they're an Albion season ticket holder automatically gets 20% off any purchase they make there. They don't just do flowers. They do all kind of ornaments and trinkets and memorial potlets.
Booze. They do booze.
And they do bowls, not bowls for the baby, but they do. But yes, additionally to what we said last week, we will actually get round to asking Phil for his floral football links.
Yeah.
I can't think of any offhand, but I'm sure that they do. But yes, head over to Portland Road in Hove, go and see Flowers Unlimited, and tell them that you love this show.
Okay, Robert. Okay, so I mean, Harty alluded to this a minute ago, but just about how the hell did Barry Lloyd get a team with a negative goal difference to a Wembley playoff?
I don't know, but No, I think basically what he did, he got a bunch of misfits together. We had a good team spirit, and we went on a great run. We just had a great run. We just got great momentum, and you know, myself, Mike Small, John Byrne, John Robertson, people like that. We all scored important goals on the way there. But I just think he got a group of players who had something to prove. And I think the Wembley game was just a step too far for us. I think our cup final was the Millwall games. But I think, you know, it was just a step too far for us in the final, you know. But it was a great journey. Some great lads who were still friends today. So
I've said this stat before, actually, and I think you were a little bit wowed by it. But Robert Codner is still Brighton and Hove Albion's all-time leading goal scorer in the playoffs.
Am I? I didn't even know that myself.
With two.
With two.
Yes. No one else has ever scored more than one. And it's two in that game against Millwall. So, yeah. It's an accolade that you should be proud of. I just hate
I'm very proud of that. I'll take any accolade you can get.
But it's interesting when you
say he didn't give me that many back in the day.
But it's interesting that when you said you turned up there and you said there was a great team spirit there. Now, obviously, you know, sort of, I think probably unless a player is genuinely cheesed off about being out of place, they're not necessarily going to be the same. But we've had people on this show, ex-players, from various eras, probably going all the way back to the 1960s, I'm thinking of John Templeman, and several, and Norman Gall, and people like that, and several coming this way through the years. They've all said, what a pleasant place to be it is. I suppose probably that the setting of the Goldstone helped a bit, but you know, probably the rest of it didn't, like where you were training, like around the dog muck in Hove Park and things like that. But the number of people that have said about you know, great bunch of lads, great club to play for, although clearly, you know, with its problems at the time that you were here. But what was it about the place that you were that so enchanted you?
Well, I just think when we couldn't find the training ground, we used to have to run, you know, the park across the road.
Yeah.
We used Hope to park, run around that, and that was our training session. It was just things like that that just brought us all together, you know. Sometimes we'd go and train on the beach, you know.
Wow.
Running through the sand and stuff like that. So it was just
two chariots of, to the music of Chariots of Fire.
I don't know about that.
Well done for finding some sand, by the way.
Well, yeah. Actually, it's interesting you're saying about running around Hove Park. Peter Ward always tells that story. I think it was one of the directors would drive past as they're doing it and give one or two of them a lift. Did that tradition carry on while you were there?
Yeah, we did the same thing, honestly. Honestly, we had to run in the sea and run out again. But I wasn't naked, by the way. So
don't give me that.
You were on the wrong beach.
You were on the wrong beach.
That's further up.
But when it came to being the manager, obviously you said that that Barry gave you that second chance. But on a day-to-day basis, when it came to, you know, the training and the tactics and what have you, what was Barry's role? Was he hands-on? Was he the tactician? Was he the motivator? What was his What was his forte when he was with the squad?
I think obviously he had Martin Hinshelwood with him, and I think they complemented each other. I think. At times, Barry would pull you to the side and he'd just say to you, you know, you're a good player. Go out and win the game for me. And, you know, it just made you feel like $1 million. Do you know what I mean? And you just want it up. Well, me personally, I wanted to play for him because, as I said, he gave me my opportunity. And Hinch was good as well. He used to be the one that put his arm around you and, you know, made you think, you know, you was the best thing since sliced bread. But, you know, we just had a really, really tight group of lads, John Crumplin, you know, we had quite a few, you know, John Robertson, you know, we all were very close. We all used to go out together and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's where the team bonding came. And we did, you know, that's why we were so close.
Yeah. I mean, Chappers says exactly the same thing as well. I mean,
what a guy.
Ian Chappers. Absolutely. Local lad as well. Yeah. I played football against them at school. When I say I played football, he played football. I was just made to look like a dummy.
But yeah, I mean, Ian Chapman, another good young player who came through early doors. And, you know, what a great servant to the football club he was as well, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because it's incredible. But I mean, because it's like, you know, you see these, they've all come back and done coaching at some point. I mean, Hinch is still there now. Vic Bragg's only just retired a couple of weeks ago.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw that.
It's a, these are part of our heritage, for want of a better way.
Was there a crossover with your time and Vic's there?
I think Vic was there. Yeah. He was one of the coaches then, I think. Yeah. One of the youth coaches.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, got on well with Vic. He was a nice man. Really.
So while you were playing your games and while you were training, and obviously Barry having to have his time split between being manager and being managing director, did you really get a sort of sense of a malaise setting in of problems, or did you just kind of try and be professional and get on with it?
Well, I sort of like knew there was a problem when I didn't get my wages. Do you know what I mean? So
really?
So, yeah, we did know there was a problem. And at one point, you know, obviously they didn't pay us for like 6 months, you know.
Christ.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't. Well, they didn't. Actually, sorry, not 6 months. I think they didn't pay me for about 3 months. I then took it to the PFA, and I was supposed to get a free transfer, and it didn't happen, because they put money in my account that morning when I went to the PFA. So if they had done that, then obviously I would have got a free transfer. But
Okay, naming names and assuming they're dead. Are we talking about in your towards the back end of you being at the Alps? I thought it might be them.
No, but this is the thing. This is the thing about fans not knowing.
There was
These
a lot of things
people,
that went on that people don't know about.
These people that Robert referred to, even back then, were multi-millionaires back then. How disrespectful not to pay a working man his wage. It's just you can't make it up.
No.
And I don't know, and it's still going on now in various football
Of course.
clubs. And all the time the Royal Mint puts out money, it always will do, sadly, because that's people's nature. But I don't know. You talk about Ian Chapman, and that was a case in point, how the club was being run at the time. Ian Chapman found out he was being released from the Albion when he heard it on the 10 o'clock news on Southern Sound.
Wow.
That's when he went
What
to
a way to
Gillingham,
get
wasn't
that.
it?
What a way to get that news.
When they gave Tony Millard the retained list and the release list before they told any of the players. That's how bad things were. And I think fans now, for all the enjoyment they'll get when we get 3 points against Spurs, fingers crossed on Sunday,
Fingers crossed.
I don't think people realise how bad it was back then, sitting in their lovely seat at the Amex now.
But also as well, what you've got to take on board as well is the job that Tony Bloom's done as well. I mean,
Oh, superb,
but what he's done for the football club, I mean, unbelievable. And what a nice man as well. What a nice man.
Yeah, he's done everything right. Where if there was someone who could do something wrong back in those days, and we're talking 30 years ago, if there was something that could be done wrong, it was done wrong by the
We
sounds of
didn't.
things. Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
But
Yeah,
the
go on,
problem with
Ian.
this is, though, Robert, another one of your old clubs, I know you weren't there for very long, is going through exactly the same thing now with Reading. And it's like, it's just that, their players aren't getting paid until, and they don't know whether they're going to still be in existence from 1 week to the next. I can't believe it's still happening now.
No, all it is, I mean, you've got someone that doesn't care about the club and the people that are at that football club and the community. And it's, Reading Football Club is a big part of Reading. It is Reading, and for that guy wanting to just run it into the ground, and because he doesn't get his pound, his money for what he thinks the club's worth, I mean, it's terrible. Absolutely terrible. Oh, the FA or whatever can't do something about it. I don't know.
We're back to our nonsense from again the mid-90s. The FA couldn't do anything about it because football clubs are private institutions. And you think, well, hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. If they're going to have these articles of association, then you adhere to them and make sure that they are like that. But I just want to sort of like pick up on an historical point here from a point that Harty made about three quarters of an hour ago, is that, and at least he's been humble enough to say, oh my God, what were we thinking? It was that when David Bellotti finally fired Barry Lloyd, he got a standing ovation, and was guest of honour at the Gull's Eye Christmas dinner.
It was crazy. Al, I do apologise. It's probably never happened in the history of the Albion Raw, but I've now got to go and change a nappy. So I'm going to have to.
I
I'm going
have to do that with
to.
AD every week, don't
I'm
worry.
going to have to let you leave. Robert, I'll see you on the 25th.
In all that time, I mean, did you as players, obviously you're not necessarily you didn't grow up in Brighton, but you're loyal to the team all the while that you're playing in the contract and they want you there. I mean, but seeing as you could see, or even whether if it wasn't whole of it, then the part of it, the malaise that had set in, was there even then? Do you actually sort of look back and you think, could we have done more as players?
I don't think so, because I think what happens is because you start realizing there is something wrong and majorly wrong at the football club, it starts to, and once you're not getting paid and stuff like that, You're not allowed overnight stays at hotels. You know all those sorts of things, and you're now not getting any food at the training ground and all stuff like that. Then you realize, oh, there's a massive problem here, and you then start thinking, well, you start thinking about your family and things like that. Are we going to get paid this month? Are we not going to get paid this month? And you start getting all those kinds of worries. Do you know what I mean? So.
Because I mean, one of the points you just made there is massively important because of you mentioned no overnight stays in hotels. At that particular time, most of the teams we were playing were probably in the north. Well, they were in the north and a long way north, some of them,
Long
like
way.
likes of Hartlepool and Doncaster and Carlisle, etc. You know, these to have to do that there and back in a day is knackering, and then have to play 90 minutes of football on top of that. It's not easy, is it?
Nope. And we had to do that quite a bit towards the end, going on the day, early hours in the morning. Do you know what I mean? Going up north, and then having to perform, sometimes getting caught up in the traffic. Wasn't a really good time, to be fair, and it wasn't a good time to be at the football club.
Give us, I know you've talked bits and pieces about Barry and the fact that, he resurrected your career. Give us a kind of closing statement, one that you wish to remember Barry by.
Always had a cigarette in his hand. That's not But no, I just remember him being a real true gent. And I just remember him as being the sort of person that, if he saw something in you, he'd give you a chance, and he was a great believer in giving people a second chance. And that's my greatest sort of like thoughts of Barry. He always believed in giving someone a second chance. I mean, I had maybe two or three or four chances, like some of the others. He always believed in giving you a chance. Do you know what I mean? And I will always be grateful to him. And we became friends once, he came out of management and became a scout. We always used to meet each other for lunch and have and meet each other for coffee. And we always used to chew the fat over the football club and all things Brighton and all
Sure.
that stuff. But I just remember him being a person that always would give someone a second chance.
Sure.
And always laughing as well. He was always laughing with that little chuckle he had,
And that's why your team became known as the Expendables, probably.
Well, the thing is that what I'm really glad of here, AD, and I've got to say this to Robert, and obviously Ian's disappeared, although he's left his cam on actually, but so he's probably listening in. But I'm actually really glad that this conversation, here is happening on account of the fact that, like I say, the because of the rift, the it was never really. Nowadays we have a reasonable relationship with the board of directors, and it probably was started by Dick Knight, who was sometimes a little too sort of there's things you got to hear that you really frankly shouldn't have done. But under Tony Bloom, under Paul Barr, we've kept it going. But in those days you just turned up, clapped, cheered, moaned, grizzled, went home, and that was your entire Albion experience. But what I'm but so that disconnect of fans who, like I say, because Barry never really overly endeared himself to fans in the way that someone like, say, Mullery did first time round, or Mickey Adams, or Chris Hughton, or whatever it is. I'm glad that you've actually kind of put that record right for us, because it was a dark period in the Albion's history. And you think, well, playing football where you got a manager whose own personal PR was a little bit belligerent, but obviously because you saw a different person. I want to say thank you, Robert, for actually sort of putting it straight about sort of telling us who the real Barry Lloyd was, and I'm very grateful that you've done that.
And it's like, I mean, it's in Tim Carter's very excellent book, the Albion A to Z. He refers to Barry Lloyd as the most unpopular manager in Albion history. So
Yeah.
really?
Really?
that's what he said. I mean, it just goes to prove that there's three sides to every story: it's yours, mine, and the truth. And
Exactly. I think I would go along with Roberts more than anything because he
I
knew him
think
better
so.
a
I
lot
think so.
so. And
Well, I mean, okay. I mean, let's move on to present day. I mean, I know you're an agent now. I know you used to look after Solly. I know you're not doing that anymore. But what do you make of the Albion now? And with
Oh,
your professional head on, where it can go?
yeah, I mean, listen, had some really, really good managers over the years, especially the last 3 or 4 years. I think Albion can challenge for Europe, hopefully one day for the Champions League. But I just think, I never thought I'd see Albion as high up as they were, but they're doing excellent. And I just think from top to bottom, the club is run very well. And as I say, you've got to take your hats off to Tony Bloom, for doing that. And I just see more and more success along the way for the Brighton.
Are you kind of envious about being born 30 years too early?
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
Imagine you on those pitches now rather than the
Oh,
battlefield.
Oh
oh,
God, you'd be
but
like a
listen,
kid in a sweet shop.
listen, the lads are lucky. They have everything, and good luck to them,
Yeah.
And what do you make of high lines? High defensive lines.
absolutely. Listen, I think, me personally, I think it's absolute rubbish what they do, honestly. This high line stuff. Defenders should be able to defend, and they're not doing that at the moment. All this high stuff, you should drop. If you've got to drop, you've got to drop. If you don't have to, but this high line is playing out. I'm not a great fan of it, if I'm
Nah.
honest.
It wasn't the greatest on Saturday, but it was you know what? That was the first game we've lost this season, and actually, despite the scoreline, it was actually we actually played
We
very well.
won the game. We still could have won the game, in the first 20 minutes, maybe. If
Yeah, it's
we
you
scored
know,
another goal earlier on, then it could have been a different story.
I mean, if everyone's talking about like Adam Webster's mistake. I mean, Robert Sanchez doesn't want to see that game again. I'll tell you that again.
Agent Sanchez, yeah.
Exactly.
No, I mean, if we are going to get onto this sort of like ridiculous thing, I mean, it is a very macabre subject to talk about. But when you're talking about, like I say, that level of entitlement that you feel that, you know, the nature of abuse is perfectly acceptable on account of the fact that because the internet is so much more democratic than other forms of speech that one had even 30 years ago, where you had basically a phone in, or you had a newspaper which you didn't have access to. And so now we've got the internet that's so much more democratic, and it's sometimes just a tool for fools, isn't it?
Listen, everyone's a manager
Yes.
who watches football. They're all managers. But at the end of the day, like I said to you before, listen, good luck to Adam Webster. I hope he carries on, and that has a very successful career at the Albion. But there's no reason for him to be getting the abuse that he's getting.
No, not at all.
Listen, if he's played badly, he's played badly. But as I say, there's no way you should be getting abused at the
Yeah.
way that you're being abused.
I
And I
mean,
think anyone doing it, they should be ashamed of themselves. And just get behind the lads and encourage him, because there's no place in football for that kind of abuse.
it says far
And
more about the people
he
doing the
under,
abuse, doesn't it?
I
It
mean,
says so far more about them than it does about their
yeah,
target. I mean,
yeah.
Adam undercooked a pass, but he also made a crucial goal line clearance, which people seem to have forgotten,
Listen,
which
he's a
is,
good player. Adam West is a good player.
yeah, we said it. I mean, there was an illness going around the squad last week, and it affected. We lost three players because of it, and we've said with Adam Webster before, it takes him a few games to get back into his stride, and to go in under that particular style of play at Chelsea was always going to be a big ask. But Fabian said after in the press conference afterwards that he's going to speak to the players and see how they feel about it, because it's not non-negotiable. So let's hope
No,
that we can
no.
actually see, because at the end of the day, it doesn't fit the players we've got at the moment for that. I
No.
mean, Doncic's getting older and slower,
Yeah.
and he wasn't
And
quick in the first place.
well, no, and like Van Hecke was a big miss at the weekend, but like I said, we did actually play quite well in this game, and we on another day we could have scored five ourselves.
Absolutely.
Listen, on another day, we'll beat a team 4 or 5 nil. Do you know what I mean? So, so that we've got that in our locker now. There's some great players and there's great some great young.
Okay. Well,
Yeah,
let's talk
sorry,
about that, because
AD.
it's
Sorry,
your position as well.
AD.
Yeah.
I've got to ask this because I think it's pertinent, and it's just for a historical note. Robert, when obviously when AD's just said there that Fabian's talking to the players and they've got to see well, not necessarily if it works, but how it's going to work better. Did you have that with Barry, that he was democratic enough that he'd listen to the players saying, well, actually, you've asked me to do this, but I don't feel comfortable? Or is he one of those that say, look, you're a footballer, get on with it?
No, you could always go in and speak to him. His door was always open. You know, if you weren't playing, I'd be knocking on his door if I wasn't playing. Do you know what I mean? Like so many other players would. So, no, it was never a point where you couldn't go and speak to him. Obviously, he'd have the last say and the last, sure, you know, that decision. But his door was always open to, well, as far as I knew, to players to go in and speak to him.
And did you always feel you were listened to?
With me, my conversations with him were always good. Sometimes he threw a few Fs and a few Bs as well. But yeah, no, on the whole, no, there was always, he listened and he saw my point of view and I saw his point of view. And yeah, so, you know, I'd always...
Well, it took you a while to see him after you fought through the smog of smoke.
Yeah, I mean...
There is that.
I mean, back in the day, I was... my memories of Barry at the time, when I first came across him, I was a ball boy at the Goldstone back then.
Yeah, okay.
And so old, because I'm really young. And...
Andy.
Yeah, but you know, Barry always used to come and have a chat with us. He always had time for everybody and it was like he always come in and have a joke, have a laugh and a joke with Jock Riddell, and like
I'm
sure there's a few you know, loads of players have got different stories to tell about Barry, but he was a good person and a good man.
Yeah. And I guess probably his funeral is actually going to be, there's going to be a hell of a lot of stories after that, isn't there?
Yes, definitely, definitely.
Yeah,
no.
Definitely.
Yeah,
it's going to be isn't it?
Aidy, getting back to what you're saying about sort of, you know, sort of, we could have played better. I mean, I think it's probably along the lines of any manager down in history is that the best ones, they'll have the best tactics, they'll have the best way of doing it. I say the high line absolutely terrifies the bejesus out of the fans in the way that the we play it out of the back under De Zerbi over the last couple of years did. But like I say, it's good to see that in the history of football, the best managers not only know what they're doing, but will actually listen to the people around them. And I'm hoping that Fabian can do that.
Well, yeah, let's hope so. But just before we close, I just want to ask you about one of our current players who started the season like a train, plays in your position, and that's Carlos Baleba. What have you made of him so far?
What a good player. What a good player. He's gonna be a great player for the Albion. I think he's technically good. He's got a great engine in him. I just think he's a very, very good player, mate.
And he's starting to add goals as well.
Yeah, and there's big things to come from him. For sure.
Well, you know, he's. I can't think of too many Albion midfielders that have scored 50 goals for the Albion.
Thank you very much, Andy. I was wondering when you was going to mention that.
I was wondering when you got my name right, but you know.
Oh. Close enough. It's close enough. Don't worry about it, Norbert.
Yeah.
Okay. And with that, that's all we've got time for. So thank you so much to Ian Hart, and thank you to Robert Codner for joining us. Thank you to Alan Wears. Thanks for listening. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We'll see you all again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
I know. Somebody, please, Mr. Misery, torture her like you torture me. Creep into her dreams at night, make her know she's not treating me right, Mr. Misery. Torture her like you're torturing me. Come on, why don't you leave me alone? Wake her in the midnight hour, her body cold and filled with tears. Make her go 7 days, 7 days without a meal, Mr. Misery. Like you're torturing me. this girl, for I still love her, you see. Just make her realize the hurt she's put on me. I can't help it. So make every couple she sees remind her of the days with me. And may she every day long to hear the sweet things I used to say, Mr. Misery. Torture her like you're torturing me. Come on, why don't you leave me alone?